Hey, my name is Saul Colt, and my favorite thing is late night television, but most specifically, The Letterman Show.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hi there, and welcome to another episode of Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. In this episode, I am talking with Saul Colt, one of the most interesting men in the world. And we're talking about late night TV, specifically David Letterman. But we explore the whole world of celebrity and being a fan, going to see live comedy. Saul is someone that if we happen to be in the same town for a conference or a random overlap in flights, he is someone I always try to get dinner with. So it was really fun to spend a couple hours on a Sunday morning talking about late night TV. I think you're going to start hearing one of the themes when I talk to my friends about their favorite things. Part of the wisdom of growing up is realizing that being a fan of something doesn't mean shitting on other things, that it's okay to just say, you know what, that thing's not for me, that it's okay to grow out of your initial fandom, that it's okay to love one thing and not another, and that doesn't mean it's something that other people shouldn't love. So enjoy this conversation with Saul Colt and have a good day. Now you can give me the praise you're giving me before.
Okay. You sent me an email. You asked me to be on your podcast, and you included a mind map of like the concept of where, all these passions of yours and content and things sort of sprung out of. And it is so brilliant because it made me think of like, well, one, I didn't want to come on here and sound stupid, but it also forced me to really think of what were the origins of some of the things that I'm most passionate about. And it was difficult for me to even choose one, because I thought, do I want to talk about artists? Do I want to talk about books? Do I want to talk about TV shows? But I think I nailed the right one for me. But I don't want to spoil the interruption. You tell me the flow of the show. I just wanted to compliment you because I consume like hundreds of podcasts. I thought that there was no original ideas left, and this is a truly original idea. So I'm excited to be a part of it.
And like I said in the email, I drew that mind map just because I had written a paragraph where I was like, I got from all of my podcast consumption starts with The West Wing and The West Wing Weekly, which got me into listening to podcasts. And then I was like, but then how did I end up with like two podcast players on my phone? And I'm in like five different podcast fan groups on Facebook. Like, how did it happen? And so then I started tracing, really, like the one I sent you is how did this get made is at the center. What movies have I watched because of it? What TV shows? What have I done to support Paul, June, and Jason, my invisible friends? Mm-hmm. What guests have they had? And then a friend I talked to this morning from college, he drew one too. And he was just like, okay, if I start at Best Week Ever, and then I go Paul Scheer and Paul F. Tompkins, and then I go to this whole world of comedy. And it's just so fun to think about when an algorithm isn't putting your next thing in front of you, mm-hmm. what's the journey? Mm-hmm.
So with mine, and I'm not going to reveal it until you tell me it's okay to, but with mine, it really started in high school, I guess. So all the things that I'm, sort of I sprung out from was way before Amazon said, maybe you'd like this too or whatever. But the thing that was really fascinating about this, and, you mentioned Paul Scheer, that'll send you down a rabbit hole because he's been in a zillion things. I was watching 30 Rock the other day, and he pops up and all these things that you haven't watched in forever. And all of a sudden you see all these people. But it is so fascinating when I was really thinking of this to not only look at what was important to me, what's still important to me. So just using podcasts as an example, the thing that got me into podcasts was Kevin Smith, you know, and his early podcasts. And now, like, you know, I wish him all the luck and success in the world. I don't listen to the podcast anymore because I guess I've heard every one of his stories and I just kind of outgrew it or whatever. So it was also really interesting to see the thing that got you into your passion, whether it's sustained or, you know, it introduced you to something else and that something else became the bigger obsession or the bigger passion than the thing that actually got you into it.
Totally. All right. So welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. And today I am so excited to have with me live from Toronto. Are you in Toronto?
Okay. Yes. Reporting live from my basement.
Reporting live from his basement, Saul Colt. Saul and I are internet friends who met.
We're real friends. Come on. We had dinner like when you were allowed to travel, we had dinner last time I was in Chicago.
And I believe we met at Mesh in 2007. Does that sound like it could be right?
Yeah, Mesh, and then a bunch of times hanging out at South by Southwest and various different, you know, just happened to be in the same city at the same time. You invited me to your house for a Hanukkah party once.
Yeah, I was in Chicago on Hanukkah, so you came for a big Hanukkah party once. Yeah. No, we are real life friends, and our origin story is the internet.
Okay, that's fair. I take that.
Okay. So when I thought about people who have favorite things and would have a story to tell, you came to mind, and I thought what you might pick is sneakers.
No.
Because I you have never shown up at a South by Southwest without custom sneakers, without a full custom look. But I suspect that is not the topic for today. So tell me, what is your favorite thing that we're going to talk about?
So like I sort of teased at the beginning, my favorite thing is something that was so crucial to me in high school, and it's something that I don't really care for anymore, but I'm going to say late night talk shows. Letterman was such an influence on me, and in like, I just thought he was brilliant, and I would stay up and watch every episode of Letterman that I could. And through Letterman, I went backwards and was, you know, and I knew of Carson and I had watched it as a kid a little bit, but I didn't have that idolic, you know, sort of fever that I had for Letterman with Carson. But through Letterman, I was introduced to Carson, and Letterman, Carson, and Mad Magazine sort of formed my sense of humor that I sort of carry with me today.
Solid trifecta of 80s comedy.
But when I think of Letterman, I think of how many incredible bands I was introduced to that I'd maybe never heard of, because I think Letterman more than most really gave a real, you know, real due to a lot of bands that weren't, you know, maybe super mainstream at that time. When I think of Letterman, I think of, you know, first time I ever saw Pee Wee Herman perform was on Letterman. The first time I ever saw Sarah Silverman was on Letterman. I think I'm obsessed, like, to a loving point with Gary Shandling. And, you know, it was seeing Gary Shandling on Letterman that made me go back and watch him on Carson when he was guest hosting. And, you know, and I wouldn't have probably known about the Gary Shandling show, not Larry Sanders, before Larry Sanders, Gary Shandling, if it wasn't him being just incredibly funny and mysterious and interesting on the Letterman show. Because, you know, I'm so bad with timelines. I have no idea what years I'm even talking about, but the only way that I ever found stand-up comedians, which I love stand-up comedy, was A&E had Evening at the Improv. When I was in high school, you know, kids today, they don't realize A&E was basically 18 hours a day of Nazi and Hitler documentaries, and then they'd have about 3 hours of stand-up comedy, and then that was A&E. It was like the Hitler and Jews channel. Like they competed with each other.
It's like during the day, how did Hitler lose?
Yes. What was his last meal? All these things.
Right. And then at the night, the comedy is like, and the Jews, we lived. And here's our comedy for you.
But when I think of so many people that have had such an influence on me, it all comes back to either Letterman or Carson, you know, like Albert Brooks. You know, I didn't see it live, but I've watched every one of Albert Brooks's appearance on The Tonight Show. And like, he's just so brilliant. And you know, obviously, as I got older and I got a little nerdier and I wanted to know the stories behind the things and stuff like that, like, you know, you hear these stories of Albert Brooks where he never set foot in a comedy club. He would work on a stand-up bit and perform it live for the first time on The Tonight Show without ever getting feedback from anybody or in things. And like, I would have never seen any of the stuff if it wasn't for late night, you know, things. And I'm firmly in the Letterman camp, but I do want to give a little bit of due to Jay Leno, because, you know, like Jay Leno had They Might Be Giants on, and that was like a huge thing for me. I loved They Might Be Giants. To see a band that I really loved, that I sort of thought I was one of the only people that really liked, because at, you know, this time there wasn't the internet the way we think of it now. I was probably on Prodigy and we were hanging out in Usenet groups and things like that. To see a band that you know, none of your friends knew, and you thought you were the only person in your high school that really dug, to be on The Tonight Show and playing with Doc Severinsen and the horn section and all that stuff. I can trace almost every milestone moment of pop culture, you know, in my formative years, tracking back to Letterman, Leno, or Carson.
So I'm curious, were you like taping Leno so you could watch Letterman when they were head to head against? No, wait,
I was 90% Letterman and 10%. So I
if Leno had a good guest, you would watch Leno that night.
Yeah. Or I would tape one or the other and stuff like that. But even like, you know, the thought of that, who even pays attention to who's on these shows anymore? Like I would look like the good old TV guide, because you didn't have that guide on your TV. People listening probably are going to think I'm like 150 years old, but you'd look and see who was on the show. And I have VHS tapes still. I don't have a VHS player, but I have every one of Letterman's anniversary shows. They do the two hour, like, you know, clip shows and stuff like that. Those were like those. I was never really that into Seinfeld. And it's funny, as an older person watching comedians in cars and stuff like that, he's actually a really awful, mean spirited person, at least that's my opinion. Like, he's really not a nice person. So like, Seinfeld wasn't my appointment television or whatever. It was those Letterman anniversary shows.
Like, I had a moment this week because Netflix or Hulu keeps pushing Seinfeld on me, and I it was on, like, I consumed it, but I didn't watch it. And I was watching a few episodes this week, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I am currently in my life 10 to 15 years older than they were on the show in the first season. They were in their late 20s and I'm in my early 40s now. Watch those shows and you are younger than the characters, and then you revisit them and suddenly you're like, wait, I can't relate to them because now I'm an adult and now I see what they're doing is bad behavior. It's mean, it's petty, and it just can't be funny anymore.
I look at it two ways. I recently watched Basic Instinct, and I hadn't watched it in about a decade. And man, there's this date rape scene in it that was really jarring and didn't age well. And I think that it's like, you know, I've grown as a person and I've, you know, thing. I look at things like that and I sometimes, you know, sort of shame it off and say it was a different time and we should let art stand as a mirror to the society at that moment. But when I see Seinfeld now, currently still being that awful person, I think like, This is now, this, like, you can watch the show and, like, you know, Friends, there was no black people in Friends, you know, and stuff like that. And you look at it and you say, well, you know, that would definitely never play now. But if they created a new one and there was still no black people, then, you know, you'd sort of have to like wonder what's going on. And I wonder about Seinfeld, because like, I get it. He won. He's got all the money in the world. But Larry David also won. And he seems to be a very different person than Seinfeld is. And I realize like they're different, but Larry David, you know, who I also think is incredible and amazing. He holds up a mirror to society and points out its shortcomings in a humorous way. where Seinfeld could be the guy he's holding the mirror up to if he really wanted to.
And it is one of the things that I find so compelling about podcasts is that, and I think Jason Mantzoukas is an excellent illustration of this. He plays maniacs. Mm-hmm. And
my favorite character on Brooklyn Nine-Nine is any episode that he's on.
Yes. He plays maniacs without a moral center, without hygiene some of the time. You know, if you look at Rafi on The League, Memento on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Derek on The Good Place, just these wild maniacs. But if you listen to him on a podcast, you're able to see that he is not his character. He's a thoughtful person. He's working on himself. And then yeah, you get a Seinfeld who you watch the TV show, Mean and Petty. And then you watch Coffee and Cars with Comics and you see like, oh no, he's not showing growth in that.
So I went back and revisited Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, but I only watched like certain episodes of either people I admired or the car that I wanted to see. And so we talked about Albert Brooks, of course, his brother, Bob Einstein, is like one of the best, you know, comedic minds of all time, like just loved him. He was on Comedians in Cars. So for those of you who don't know who Bob Einstein is, Super Dave Osborne, it's actually Albert Brooks's brother. The reason Albert Brooks changed his name is Albert Brooks's given name is Albert Einstein. And he didn't think that would fly in comedy, because for those of you who don't know, there was another famous Albert Einstein and he didn't want to get confused for him.
You are choosing names to be... At the time that he probably chose Brooks, was Mel Brooks famous yet?
Albert Brooks's origin story is he grew up, he was Rob Reiner's best friend when they were like kids. So he spent all the time in the world in Carl Reiner's home, and they like Mel Brooks, actually, Mel Brooks gave him the name Albert Brooks because Mel Brooks thought at 16 years old, he was the funniest kid he'd ever met in his life. So what I was going to say though is Seinfeld, I'm watching this Bob Einstein, and Bob Einstein is telling this really great story of his career, and he's talking about working with Red Fox and all these comedic greats. And Einstein turns to Seinfeld and he goes, how many years were you on TV? And whatever he said, I think it was 10 years for Seinfeld or whatever. He goes, I was on TV either as a writer, producer, or star for 22 years uninterrupted. Seinfeld turns to him and he goes, you know what the difference between you and me are? And what? He goes, I'm rich. And like, maybe it was a joke, maybe it wasn't. It just came off as so awful.
So in high school, you're watching Letterman, Leno, Carson. Mm-hmm. In high school, did you get into some Carson archives? Were you like going to the video store and buying? I remember you could rent like a video with 5 old episodes on it. Were you going and renting any of those to watch old Carson episodes? Or
probably not. But I will say, like a typical weekend for me, I grew into my coolness. I wasn't exactly cool from the start. A typical weekend for me was like a large pizza and 7 movies from the video store. So I would watch everything that I could get my hands on. And a lot of the stuff was, you know, like, people wonder if late night TV actually works with the, hey, where'd you go on your vacation? Let's see a 30-second clip of your movie. I actually would seek out these movies or whatever, you know, maybe, you know, wasn't first run, but I'd find something previous from that actor or everything like that. I bought tons of albums based on seeing them on shows. You know, I'd say the archive stuff really came in later in life, you know, the invention of YouTube. And 80% of what I do on YouTube is watching bands on Letterman, because things like that, and watching old clips of Letterman and Carson and things like that, because, like, I don't know, I don't want to watch a Gary Vee video or something like that. So I'm going to go, and I go deep. I get a bug in my head, and I try to go really, really deep on something I, you know, just heard of or explored or, you know, saw something, and I'll go real deep on things.
I love it. My main Letterman memory from high school is that my chemistry teacher, Mr. Wonderly, was obsessed with David Letterman. And so we would do the top 10 every day. Mm-hmm. Like it was cool. A regular feature of AP chemistry was doing Letterman's top 10 list. But I feel like I did not have a TV in my bedroom growing up. So I think we would watch. So it was all definitely after bedtime for me. And so it was harder for me really to watch late night TV, but Letterman for sure. When I could watch, I did, so I could be cool with my chemistry teacher. Also, I came into my coolness as an adult, not in high school.
Mm-hmm. I think most people do. You never want to peak too early.
We saw Jay Leno was doing it because Jay Leno has never stopped doing stand-up.
I'm a Letterman fan, but and I don't know if I particularly I didn't connect with the Tonight Show with Leno, and it could have been that I read the book about the fights and late night and all that stuff. But man, you know, I don't know about the last 20 years, but when Leno was on Letterman, he was the best guest always. In his day, best comedian of all time.
I love, now that they're both retired, I think that it might have been, I think Leno was on Dax Shepard's podcast. And Letterman, I think in conversations in his new show, Needs No Introduction, they are both now willing to give the other their due. And they talk about being at the Comedy Store and what it was like to see each other on stage and what they were like as writers and how much when they were coming up before the networks put them against each other, they really seemed to admire each other as professionals. And then these monstrous executives had to turn them against each other. And now they seem, I like to imagine them like having cigars and sitting on the back porch with a fire pit, shooting the shit. And I would love to hear that recording.
I'd love to see Jay Leno as a guest on Letterman's Netflix show. I think that would be really fascinating because Bill Carter of the New York Times wrote a great book called the I think it was called Late Shift or Late Night or whatever, but it was about the Leno Letterman feud, and he went really, really deep on it. And then he actually wrote another follow-up about Conan and Leno. And Leno comes off, everybody comes off equally good and bad in both books. Like, you know, it was kind of like warts and all on every side. And HBO made a really awful direct to HBO movie about the book where they showed Letterman the way he would blow off steam. And I hope this is embellished for the film because it's just so ridiculously funny. But he had this like 7-foot round, like bullseye, like archery target, and he would just whip softballs against it. So it wasn't even that they would stick and he could see where he hit. He would just throw baseballs at this giant padded mattress in his backyard, and it made no sense, which made me hope that it's true and not true at the same time. But it showed that like both these guys were manipulated, and also they were just two incredibly driven, motivated guys to get the best job in the world at the time. So, you know, it's like, and I don't think there was a villain or a hero in it. They both probably did stuff they regretted, and they both, you know, embarrass themselves in little ways here and there and stuff like that. But it's fascinating. Like when I, you know, just sort of getting back to it, I made my own mental mind map. I didn't write it down. I think of all the things I was introduced to that would be a branch in a mind map through Letterman. Like I'd never heard of Howard Stern in the early days of Howard Stern and stuff like that. And Letterman had him on all the time. I became a huge Howard Stern fan. Before satellite radio and you couldn't get it, I was in the hospital when I was 17 years old for like a month. And my dad paid some guy in New York City to just record Howard Stern on like a boombox and cassettes. And like while I was in the hospital, my dad just basically brought me like 17 cassettes of like 2 weeks worth of the Stern show and stuff like that. So it was like all these things that were so important to me. Like like I said, this is such a brilliant concept because it made me realize like what the epicenter was of all this stuff. You lived in Indiana?
I lived in Indiana.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What part of Indiana?
I'm from Terre Haute. So
you know Larry Bird.
Yeah, that's where he played college ball. And for many years when I was in junior high and high school, he ran a hotel called the Larry Bird Boston Connection.
Really?
Which was full of his paraphernalia. And I got to have a summer job working with my dad where we went in to repair the wallpaper and re-caulk all the bathtubs. So I spent a lot of time in the Larry Bird Boston Connection.
That's very cool. Larry Bird is like top three NBA players of all time for me. He's like one of my favorites.
So Letterman gets you to Howard Stern.
It gets me to Howard Stern. It gets me to Gary Shanley. It gets me to Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman. It gets me to Sarah Silverman. It gets me to Gilbert Gottfried. It gets me to famous comedian, died of like liver cancer, super edgy from Corpus Christi, Texas. Bill Hicks. Gets me to Bill Hicks. Gets me to Sam Kinison. Gets me to, so many bands. Like, I'm pretty sure the first time I ever heard the Pixies was on the Letterman show. The Lemonheads, Juliana Hatfield, so many great British bands. Like we didn't have like a great alternative rock station in Toronto when I was in high school. So like bands like the Donnas and Elastica, and I've got, if you go in my favorites on YouTube, there's just tons and tons of like band musical appearances on Letterman. The Lemonheads with Evan Dando did like one of my favorite. There's this one clip where they play Mrs. Robinson, the Simon and Garfunkel thing. But there's this back and forth with Letterman before the song where they were going to play. They play It's a Shame About Ray. They were going to play Mrs. Robinson, which was their cover hit tune. And Letterman, the last minute, said, "Well, you should play one of your own songs." And they're like, really? And they're like negotiating just before the introduction. And it's this cool thing. And then Evan Dando, who's like, bit of an idiot, says like, calls Letterman a suit or something. And Letterman takes a shot at what he's wearing. And then all of a sudden the song starts. Like, it's just Letterman. He wasn't a young person, but he kind of had that young person mindset compared to the other people in late night TV and stuff like that.
Yeah, because is that when still it was his later of his shows?
Yeah, the 12:30 shows. I love the 11:30 shows too, but those 12:30 shows of him throwing watermelons off the roof and all that stuff. And Chris Elliott, holy mackerel. Can we talk about Chris Elliott? Chris Elliott's like cabin boy and thing, but his early stuff on Letterman is some of the funniest stuff. If you guys haven't seen, go Google Chris Elliott and Letterman. So Chris Elliott was basically like a page at NBC. And Letterman found out that his father was Bob Elliott, the famous comedian from Bob and Ray. And he just kind of like befriended him, and he made him like a weird staffer on the Letterman show where he wasn't a writer. He wasn't thing. He was almost like a performer. Chris Elliott came out on stage once as Jay Leno. And it was like, it looked like Chris Elliott thing, but they just pretended he was interviewing Jay Leno, and he did the Jay Leno voice. And it was like there was some really edgy stuff for those early Letterman days. I think as he aged, he got a little softer, and that's not a bad thing. I think growth is always a good thing, but those early days, it's like, Letterman, he'd have a monkey cam. They would just put like an early version of a GoPro on the back of a monkey, and they'd be doing an interview. And every now and then they would just cut to like camera 7, which was a shaky camera of this like monkey running around the set with like a camera on his back. Like those early day stuff were so, so great. It sounds so stupid and trivial now, but there was nothing like it. So it was so influential. But you go through car washes in a convertible with top down, he'd make fun, terrorize people at drive-throughs. Like, it all sounds a little juvenile when I repeat it, but it made me laugh for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when he sent his mom to the Olympics. And he and his mom, who was from Muncie, Indiana, So he's a fellow Hoosier, and sent his mom to want to like the Summer Olympics as an NBC or as a talking head.
So his two people that he'd send out to do like, you know, live interviews were his mom and Larry Bud Melman, who is this like close to 70 year old, sort of down on his luck, you know, stage actor who they brought in and kind of gave him a second career and made him like a personality. Like, you know, Larry Bud, he was this old guy who didn't really understand the situation all the time. And they'd have like a, you know, an earpiece in his ear, you know, sort of feeding him the questions and things like that. But they would just have like, you know, they'd send him to the Port Authority welcoming people to the country. And they would like, you know, do all these kind of like almost before there was Stuttering John style, Stuttering John interviews, send him to press conferences and stuff. And he was always just this adorable old man who was like not really sure why he was there or, you know, what he was supposed to be doing.
So you said something interesting at the very top of the podcast, which is that late night TV just doesn't do it for you anymore.
Yeah, and it's not the hosts. It's not anything. I think the goal of late night TV is very, very different, where I'm not sure exactly what the goal was for Carson and Letterman and Leno. I assume the goal was just get the highest ratings and put on a good show every night. But now the goal is, I think, to get the most number of views on your social media clips. So the shows are structured, in my opinion, far more to create two or three YouTube clips rather than create a great 60-minute show and things like that. So whereas, like, you know, you think of the Carson show, it, you know, people like Steve Martin and Albert Brooks and Don Rickles, they knew they were going on Carson. They would actually come planned with something really great. This is great. If you search Don Rickles on Carson on YouTube, you know, every time he came on, he had a shtick and a gimmick. There was one time where he sat down, he turned his back to Carson, and he just talked to Ed McMahon for 4 minutes, and he pretended like Carson wasn't even there. Like, everyone had a shtick, you know? It's like it was so important to be on these shows, so you'd make the whole thing an experience, where now I think, you know, it's like the monologue isn't important. Really, almost who the guests are isn't important. It's like, what is that going to be, that YouTube clip for that night? And that's cool, but it's like, it's kind of like Saturday Night Live for me. Saturday Night Live, I used to love as a kid. I don't watch it anymore because I kind of know if anything's funny, it'll pop up on Twitter somewhere and I can see it. Letterman is guilty of this too, but, you know, the you know, I've listened to a bunch of podcasts with Letterman, you know, after the show is done and talking about the new Netflix special. And he talks about how the formula of late night didn't work for him after a while, because it was literally 6 minutes with each guest and you had to ask them about their vacation, or you had to ask them about, it was very superficial, and he likes the long form format so he can actually get into it. I think I've grown up to the point where I don't want superficial conversations anymore. And maybe that's podcasts has ruined it for me, because I look at a, whether it be Dax Shepard or any of these shows, and you see an hour and 45 minutes with a guest, and that excites me rather than scares me, because like, if I'm going to give you my time, I want to actually leave with something. And I don't think you can do that with 6 minutes anymore. So, but maybe podcasts killed late night television. 6 minutes isn't enough for to get to know anybody.
Yeah, I think that's a really compelling argument. And I think also what YouTube has done to the late night format, because like you said, you would look at TV Guide, you would look at the week, you would look at who the guests were going to be, who the bands were going to be, make your decisions based on that. There weren't as many surprise drop-ins because you needed people to have their eyes in front of the show when it happened, because it wasn't going to happen again. So there was much more of an importance on appointment television, on if you saw it, you saw it. If you didn't, it just disappeared.
So here's, I don't know if we've ever had this conversation. I've beaten it to death in many different formats, but I think that YouTube is, you know, and it's kind of, I'm parroting everything you just said about the, it's available, it's not desirable anymore. But I also think that a little bit of like binge culture has kind of ruined TV in a lot of respects. And, you know, for one, I think of Breaking Bad, which is a great show, and Better Call Saul, which I think is even a better show. I can go to Netflix and see three seasons of it, but I still watch it two at a time and take a break because the shows are so heavy, you need to breathe. The problem with the fact that everything's available is nobody talks about television anymore because nobody's watching it at the same time. So you and I may have the exact same favorite show, but we could be three seasons apart. So we can't actually have that conversation. For anyone to have a conversation about television now, you have to find someone already talking about it. You have to ask if it's okay, because maybe they haven't seen it all. So it's like, I actually think binge culture has ruined like fandom to a certain extent, because it's like, you like, there is no water cooler conversation anymore the way there was around Friends and stuff like that. Like, nobody is talking about a moment, which is why maybe the only thing that is left in that world is like the Oscars and the Super Bowl or something, because like, there's nothing else that people are actually sharing at the same time. And it, like, that's what fandom is all about. And it's kind of shitty that it's all gone.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because this year for, there are very few things that I have watched in real time over the last few years. The Americans was one that I watched every
week. Great show.
Great show. Cannot imagine having to binge it, because you need a week in between every episode. Yeah,
like, you need to towel off after. It's like, it's heavy.
And The Good Place. Mm-hmm. The Good Place I watched every week, and then got together with a group of friends. We watched the finale at a bar that was across the street from a frozen yogurt place. So we could all go get frozen yogurt and then come back and watch the finale. And to be with people, because for years I watched the Super Bowl on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't go to parties. I got terrible food poisoning like 10 years ago at a Super Bowl party. And I was like, you know what? I'm good. I'll lay on my couch. I'll watch the tweets go by. And also for many years I worked in marketing. So Super Bowl, I had to watch it. I had to see how my brand's commercial, like, but to be in a bar with people to watch a Good Place finale was such a unique experience. Mm-hmm. And then I also, the last trip I took before Shelter in Place started was to California. And I happened to be in LA for the Super Bowl. And I was there for a conference and we went to a bar, and I was just like, I haven't been out in real life for a Super Bowl and not on my couch watching tweets or monitoring a brand. And I was just like, this is something I've missed. Mm-hmm. It really made me realize that watching TV with people and having a moment, that there was something special to that.
Yeah. And it seems like that's not a priority anymore.
Right.
Like, and even for the networks, it's not a priority.
No. And it's, but it's also, so one of the other things that you and I have that we share is the Armchair Expert podcast. We're both listeners of that. And 2 years ago this week, according to Facebook memories, I started an Armchair Expert fan group on Facebook. And the whole purpose of that was, I was trying to convince my friend Jocelyn that, she was like, I don't listen to podcasts because I want to talk to people about them. And like, how do you talk to people about podcasts? And I said, Facebook groups, we'll make a group. We'll find like 20 people. And now that group is almost 7,000 people.
That's crazy.
It is wild.
How is it that you have not been invited to like Dax's house and to hang out?
I don't know. I did meet him. I went to the stage door at the first Chicago show. Mm-hmm. So I got to meet him and say, hey, I run a fan group. And he was like, that's cool. I don't think he knew what that really meant. They're not Facebook people, the Shepherd K-Bell household. But when they did the spinoff podcast of Monica and Jess Love Boys, mm-hmm. Jess joined the group. He was in the Facebook group for like a month. I never caught his last name listening to the show. And I approve every member. And I totally missed. I just make sure you answer questions. And if not an account you made yesterday.
So Jess,
who was on a 10 episode arc of Armchair Expert, was a member of the group for a month. And the day he quit the group, he said, "Hey, this is Jess. I've been lurking in the group for a month. This is amazing. Everyone from the Padman Bell Shepherd household loves you guys." And he had been taking screenshots and sharing things with them. Then there was a feeding frenzy in the comments. And he stayed for like maybe one more hour and answered questions and said hi. And then he left the group. So I sent him a message and I said, "You have an open invitation. Like, if you want to do a Facebook Live, ask me anything that's a little bit more controlled than what just happened." Because what happened in the group was just, it was overwhelming to me, and I wasn't the celebrity. So I feel like the door is open for an invitation to at least a digital attic, if not actually to their house. Have you had any fun celebrity encounters?
My whole thing with celebrities, and I'm going to like contradict myself. I fucking love celebrities. I love everything to do with like nonsense and kitsch and like thing. I have no desire to be a real celebrity because the life actually looks awful, but I love rubbing shoulders with celebrities. I love being in rooms with celebrities. Like that stuff really like I'm a fan. So I like that stuff, but my whole like reason for being is I want to be friends with celebrities, and I want to be the guy that never asks for anything. So I never ask to take pictures, never ask for autographs. I'm the guy who gives you like the nod, like I see you, but I'm going to leave you alone and stuff like that. So, I've sat next to pseudo famous people on airplanes. The only person I've ever really stalked and been shameless about it is I have like a weird non-threatening crush on Bobcat Goldthwait. And I've seen him perform twice in the last like 7-8 months before, you know, everything got shut down. And both times I like reached out to him on Instagram before asking if I could get like a picture. He's like the one person I would break all my rules for and some of that. And like, he knows of me because he's creeped my Instagram stories without me like tagging him. But I think there's a little bit of a healthy fear of me because when I realize that, it makes me really uncomfortable. Cause again, I don't want to be that person. I have this like, just, you know, vision that we're going to start vacationing together. I saw him perform at, I went to see him stand up and waited like, so at the end of every show, he comes out and talks to everybody in the audience. So he's that kind of person. So we chatted for a few minutes and I told him I flew in just to see this show. I was really there for work, but like not that much of a crazy person, but wanted him to make him feel good about himself, realizing that it probably worked the other way around. It's like, shit, this guy's got money and he knows where I live. And then I saw him, I don't know, maybe about 5 weeks before kind of like March and everything locked down, and stuff like that. And, after the show, his eyes and my eyes caught. And I think there was like a little bit of like, recognition, and it made me uncomfortable. So I just went over, I said, "I really loved your show tonight." And then I walked away.
I guess 2 years ago, I flew to LA for the sole purpose of seeing a live show of How Did This Get Made at Largo.
I've never been to Largo. Every time I know I'm going to LA, I look at their show list because it's always like stuff I want to see. And it's either always sold out by the time I check, or it's just there's nothing going on when I'm there. But Largo is like a destination I want to check out.
Yeah, it was very cool. The area around it is very strange.
It's the Beverly Center. It's the only shopping mall in the area.
I got tickets to a late show, and I flew out there, and I was a little self-conscious about flying to LA just to see something I was a fan of. But now, especially now that we are in this shutdown and live shows aren't happening, and who knows how long until we get to see live comedy again, And I had really started to embrace just being a fan of going to see musicals, of going to see comedy, of seeing live, going to see live podcast tapings of that. I think as I moved to Chicago to pursue stand-up comedy and failed at stand-up comedy. You know, I did it for a couple years. When I listen to podcasts of stand-up comics who talk about people who just, they love doing it, but they realize they didn't have to do comedy. I think that was me, was I wanted stability. People that found like overnight celebrity, Kumail Nanjiani is someone that I went to open mics with, Pete Holmes.
That's cool.
It was fun. Like those, Kyle Kinane, those are the people I came up with who are now.
Kyle Kinane has maybe the best joke of all time. His opening thing was, he goes, "We're just going to get right into it. Let's talk about school shootings." And the crowd goes really like uncomfortable. He goes, "No, no, no. I don't mean the one that just happened that you're still sore about. I mean the one before." And then he like waits a minute. He goes, "I know what you're thinking. That joke isn't going to last a long time, but I'm pretty sure I'll be able to tell that joke for a long time." Like it's losing something in translation, but it's such a brilliant, like, you know, knock on gun culture in America in general. Yeah. He's brilliant.
Because when you judge a book by its cover, Kyle reads so redneck. And he's not at all. But that's definitely, if you just looked at him, you would think one thing. My favorite Kyle Kinane moment when I was doing stand up is I was hosting an open mic at the Cubby Bear, which is catty corner from Wrigley Field. And it had been a night where there was a lot of heckling, and that some of the male comics were pushing the crowd to heckle. Like there was just this vibe. It was not a good vibe. I think it was probably the only night I ever hosted an open mic. And so the dudes who were heckling, the woman they were with was like, "Fine, I'll go on stage. I can do comedy and I'm going to go on stage and you can heckle me." So then the comics started heckling her, and she was not a stand-up comic. She was just like a woman on a date or like a woman out with her friends. And then there's this noise in a bar of a bar stool going back. That's the sound of a bar stool right before a fight. It's just it's a record scratch of furniture moving. And that record scratch happened, and the guy she was with got up and they were like ready to rumble. I think I was on stage the moment that happened, and I was introducing Kyle, and Kyle came up and he fixed the room. I don't remember what he said or like, I don't remember anything other than Kyle had these crowd control skills to stop the heckling, fix the relationships with these drunk dudes and the woman, and get it back to being a night about comedy. And the fight didn't happen. And that is all Kyle Kinane in my books. So when Pete got his late night show, that was the first moment. And I had chosen the marketing path. And they had all chosen sleeping on couches, getting divorced. Like, it's a hard road to survive in comedy. But when Pete got his talk show, I was just like, oh, okay, now I regret it. Now I'm having inklings of maybe I made the wrong choice. But I really enjoyed not having to couch surf. I enjoy stability, I think, more than I enjoy performing.
Yeah. But you know, it's a funny thing is you talk about, you know, couch surfing and stuff like that. While we're all in, you know, stay at home mode, you know, you look on Instagram at, you know, some of these comedians and it doesn't paint the actual picture of the struggle. Like you look at David Spade, he's got this beautiful home and he's doing monologues from his basement. Whitney, Whitney Cummings has like a giraffe that she plays with in her backyard. And you forget about those 18 years or 15 years for these people that they were like, even like I saw the Gilbert Godfrey documentary. And I love Gilbert. Yeah. He lives in a $3 million New York, you know, co-op. You know, who would ever thought that was Gilbert and stuff like that? So it's, there's a real, like it's struggle. A handful of people make it and do well, but like all these great comedians that people have never heard of right now, you got to wonder what they're up to in all of this. Cause like, who knows when they're going to come back to live performances. Like,
Yeah. I, for the first time in my life, I'm not interested in being a beta user. I want to give me, I guess, the COVID 2.0 experience. I'm going to stay home as long as I am privileged to be able to stay home and work remotely. And I think I have too much future to risk. Selfishly, I don't want to get sick and die. I'm not done yet. Mm-hmm. Altruistically, I also don't want people in Chicago, you know, I don't know if I'm an asymptomatic carrier. I'm learning this is, and it feels like a particularly a Jewish value, which is that our community comes first. Mm-hmm. And the mitzvah of Pekua Nefesh, of saving a life, comes before every other mitzvah. I think it is, if the best thing I can do for the world right now is to stay at home and be a little bored and stew in my thoughts, and that is what the world needs of me right now. Okay. All right. I'll stay home.
So here's the sign of a good conversation. You listen, you digest, and you offer something back with as many points that you just brought up. So I'm not only a little bored, I'm a lot bored. Mm-hmm. And I'm so bored that I've watched this Jewish soap opera on Netflix. Do you know Shtickle?
Yeah.
I'm almost through the entire season one. It's not even in English. I'm reading subtitles, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, I watched Unorthodox. I hear that Schitzel is phenomenal.
Schitzel, I think, is like the prequel or something, because a lot of the same people are in it, but it looks like it's about a decade old or so. It could just be the beards, but that's how bored I am.
Well, I think that might be a good place for us to wrap up. So what would you like to promote, or how can people find you online?
You can find me just about anywhere. First name, last name, Saul Colt, S-A-U-L-C-O-L-T. I do non-traditional marketing. If anybody needs that stuff, you can, you know, hit me up at The Idea Integration Company, theideaintegration.com. And like, if you just have like, you know, TV or movie recommendations, drop me a line on Twitter or Instagram or something, because I've pretty much run out of things to watch on Netflix.
So thank you so much, Saul. It was great talking to you. And I will see you on the internet.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.